Greetings, and welcome to Research on Religion, a weekly podcast series devoted to the social scientific study of religion. I'm Anthony Gill, your host, professor of political science at the University of Washington, and distinguished senior fellow at Baylor University's Institute for Studies of Religion, the gracious sponsor of our podcast. We encourage you to visit our website at www.researchonreligion.org to post comments, ask questions, access additional material related to today's program, and to find out what is happening at the Institute. All right, let's begin.
Youth, they are the future. Who will think about the children? Not me, since I'm a college professor and I only want to see youth once they're adults and have been beaten down by the cold, cruel world so that they sit quiet and dutiful in their large lecture seats. I'm kidding there, and I should note that I have done my service as a youth baseball and basketball coach and an assistant scoutmaster and have volunteered for a number of activities at my son's school. However, I do know my limits, and working with kids in their preteen and teenage years is probably not my strong suit, as I tend to lack a bit of patience with that age group. Nonetheless, we can't all just ignore teenagers hoping they will go away. And this is especially true for churches. Indeed, one of the main reasons many adults return to their childhood faith after drifting away during their young adults years is that they are now raising families and want their offspring to be raised with a strong moral foundation. So youth ministry is often a critical component of any faith tradition, be it Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Buddhist, or etc. And more to that effect, churches often grow by having a continual connection of generation after generation of families. Ignoring youth would have a devastating impact on religious organizations in the long run. So I think our podcast series should take a look at youth ministry. Now, one way to do this would be to consult a scholar who has conducted research on this issue. However, as regular listeners may know, I often like to feature practitioners, folks who are in the trenches in the world of religious organizations, folks such as cowboy pastors or street preachers, both of whom we've featured here in the past. This is not to say that scholarship is unimportant, but rather I often have very mundane questions about how people in the real world operate on a day-to-day basis, and these mundane questions can oftentimes have very profound answers. In many ways, I'm inspired by that show on the Science Channel called How It's Made, and I want to kind of duplicate that in our episode here. And to that effect, my guest is the youth pastor at my own congregation, Redemption Church, here in Duval, Washington, Scott Thompson. Regular listeners will know this is the third person from my own congregation that I'm featuring, and you may be wondering why. In part, it is because they're close by, and that helps reduce the cost of interviews. But also, well, I have a habit of sitting in church on Sunday, not only listening to the sermon, but also wondering what goes on in making a church work. I guess it's hard to put the social science in me aside for an hour and a half or so. So let's get down to finding out if the kids are all right. And speaking of kids, listen to the end of this podcast, and you will get to hear the personal reflections on youth ministry of one particular kid, my own. Scott, welcome to Research on Religion.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, let's start with that kid, that question. Are the kids all right?
Yes. Yes, they are all right. They're different now than they were when I was a kid.
Oh, they always are.
Yeah. But I was a kid just after the earth cooled, and we have a lot of things in common with when I was a kid, but kids nowadays are exposed to a lot of things much, much earlier than I was. And that offers a whole set of challenges to parents and youth workers.
Now, that's a really good topic that I want to dive into a little bit later when we talk about specific challenges. But what is your take in general on the youth of today? Are we moving in a positive direction, staying the same as it's been the way it has been all the time, or things getting worse? What's your thoughts?
It's always hard to make that judgment because each of us are someplace generationally, so it's hard for me to be objective. I would say they're amazing. They have a lot of more information, a lot of better access to information than I did. So even spiritual information, they have it much more readily available to them.
Yeah.
So that is a great encouragement.
And that's actually one thing we don't think about too much. We always worry about the corrupting influences of the internet, but as we've talked about on some of our previous podcasts, the internet opens up a lot of possibilities for exploring one's spirituality and enhancing it.
Yeah, it does. It can be used for good or evil, and it's very encouraging when we see kids now with their iPhones. It used to be we would go and take the phones away from them if they're screwing around with it, texting during a talk, but now more often than not, they're looking at their Bible software.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one thing that our church had to discover fairly recently when the pastor said, you know, everybody take out their Bibles, and all of a sudden all these glowing screens appeared. And, and I'm like, well, is everybody checking football scores? No, they're checking their internet Bible.
Yeah.
Wow, which is pretty cool. So you're pretty optimistic on the kids. The kids are all right?
The kids are all right.
All right.
The future's bright.
Well, that's good to hear. Well, we'll talk about some of the very specific challenges that these kids do face here in a little bit. But my next question relates to your role as a youth minister, and it's the same question I posed to Jeff Rose, who was a street preacher that we featured on an interview recently. Are you crazy? I mean, what makes you want to work with these kids?
There's no other ministry I know of that gives you the satisfaction that youth ministry can. The potential for just these amazing, amazing transformations is so available in youth ministry that at least from my standpoint, it's not available in a lot of other ministries. So I jones for that kind of thing. You know, if I was a fisherman, I would want to fish in a well-stocked pond, and youth ministry is a well-stocked pond because we know that 85% of all people that follow Jesus choose to do so before they turn 16.
Wow. Yeah, that's an interesting statistic. And I actually have to stop and rewind the tape a little bit here. You said you jones for that kind of thing. Now, what does that word "Jones" mean? That's a youth thing.
Yeah, that's right.
I have to be.
When you're in youth, you have to hip it up a little bit.
Okay.
And I'm an old dude, so I got to work really hard at that. But yeah, I just have a desire to share God with youth.
And that's kind of really neat. And how you talk about, you know, it's a well-stocked pond. You need to go where, you know, the spiritual hunger, the spiritual need happens to be. And so, you know, kids, as you say, at that young age, they make commitments. And that transformation time as they're growing up. And we're going to specifically be focusing on the preteen and teenage years, although we could, you know, possibly talk about younger kids. But I really want to focus on those middle age where kids are growing and they're changing a whole lot. So one could only imagine that they're transforming in a multiple number of ways. So let's go ahead and into talking about your background. What is your background? Did you grow up religious or not?
Yes, I was raised in a Christian home, accepted Christ when I was 13. And I tell my kids, my students, that you couldn't have convicted me of being a Christian until I was about 24.
Uh-huh.
I really didn't do anything with my faith until then. And that's actually what kind of prompted me down this path, because we went to a large church that time. I started getting serious about my faith. They had a pastor that was actually dedicated to volunteers. And I went to her and I said, what can I do? I don't want to be a spectator. And she goes, well, what would you like to do? And I said, well, anything except work with teenagers.
Yeah.
And then just 30 years later, here I am.
So when was that? When did that conversation occur?
When you that were was 24? When I was 24 years old.
Okay. Yeah. You've just gone through the teen years and you're like, whoa, don't want to do that again.
They scared me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Teenagers are scary.
Now, you said you converted at age 13, but then didn't become a Christian until 24. So that's a 11-year period. What's going on there?
It's 11 years of my life that I wasted, I think. I mean, I was doing things, I was pursuing education and my career, but I really wasn't committed to knowing God and acting out what I hoped would be my life from then on. You know, it's just, I just kind of parked it for 11 years.
Okay, so what were your thoughts at the time? You're, you know, 16, 17 years old, graduation from high school is coming up. What were your thoughts at that time, where you're heading?
I was just very narcissistic, I think, just kind of wrapped up in what was important to me. God was a very, very small part of my life. He was always there in the background, but he wasn't really real to me and certainly not integral to my life.
And were you going to church at the time? So you said you grew up Christian, but were you attending, you're doing the weekly service thing, or did you really start drifting away?
No, weekly service, although at the church I grew up in and attended until I was about 18, they really didn't have a youth group, and that was kind of played a part in why I got involved in youth later in life.
Was that a specific denomination? Or?
Yes.
Okay, what denomination was
Presbyterian.
That? Presbyterian. Okay. So, and what part of the country was that in?
You, Southern California.
Southern California guy. So you're a surf's up kind of dude. Jonesing with the Southern California to be hip. So
that's right.
How about, okay, so you're you know, going through high school, and what's your professional life looking like? What are the early 20s looking like? Where are you heading?
I studied photography, got my degree in photography, and worked as a photographer in various disciplines until I became a full-time youth pastor, actually, much, much later in my life, my second career.
Okay. So when did you become a full-time youth pastor? About what age?
Well, I started doing it as a volunteer when I was in my late 30s.
Okay.
And I started getting paid for it when I was in my late 40s.
Okay. And so what about your background? Married kids? What's there?
Married kids, yes. I've been married for 30 years. I have a 22-year-old son and an 18-year-old daughter.
So you've gone through the parenting thing, too, which probably gives you a lot of perspective. Because one would have to think, too, you're 24 years old and somebody says, oh, go volunteer with teens. And, you know, that perspective is much different than having raised two kids and that. So did you... From your time parenting, does that bring anything to the table when you're a youth minister here?
Yeah, no, I think it really does. I always kind of feel for the youth pastors, the typical youth pastor who's, you know, 26 years old or 24 years old, and how much of my time is spent coming alongside parents and helping them with their students' questions. And I think, man, I certainly would not have been able to answer those questions when I was 24 or 26. So the experience of raising kids, I think, does helped me quite a bit in my job.
Yeah. And so what other kind of experience? Have you had formal training as a youth minister, or has this been pretty much a learn-as-you-go kind of thing?
Yeah, pretty much learn-as-you-go. I've had some amazing men that have really invested in me, amazing youth pastors, and my mentor has been in ministry for 45 years, and then just attending seminars, reading books, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So let me, and you said you're trained as a photographer and you still do the photography thing, right?
A little bit, yeah. A little bit on the
you
side
still do it as a professional career, or now is it, you know, full-time paycheck is coming from youth ministry?
Yeah, full-time. It's tough to do youth ministry full-time with as many people as we have in our program, less than however many. I don't count the hours anymore, but it's certainly full-time.
Definitely at least full-time job, if not more than right. I can imagine. And so you mentioned you got into this in your later 30s, and it's been progressed through your 40s, finally starting to get paid for it as the set profession that you're in. Have you done this at other different churches? Have you bounced around? I mean, you were in Southern California, now you're up in rural Washington. How did you get here?
We just wanted a change. We'd always lived in Southern California. I moved up here to start a photography studio in a big corporation. And then just God had been pursuing me for a number of years and just put me in positions that allowed me to have the time to serve more as a volunteer. And then men in the ministry kind of were encouraging me, pursuing me. They kept referring to me as the youth pastor. And I said, no, I'm not a youth pastor. I just hang out with the kids. And they said, no, you're a youth pastor. And finally, I just surrendered and said, okay.
Well, let me ask you about that, because that's a very interesting pathway that you take. And I think a lot of people who are listening to our show, we have a lot of homeschoolers and high school kids, as well as some college students listening to us, and they might be thinking of careers and modeling this as a professional thing, is that this is the set path that I'm going to put my first foot down and then follow that path. But yours is, now I'm kind of doing this stuff, and somebody noticed I was on this path. I didn't see that I was on this path. And so you were, in many ways, I guess, called to it rather than calling yourself to it.
No, truly. I would, because I protested for a long time, and I just finally surrendered to God, and I said, okay. I mean, he equipped me in different ways. I used to teach martial arts, and I used to have to teach kids. And then there was a period of time as a photographer, I used to shoot kids. You know, I would go out and shoot 100
kids. But shoot
kids
them with a camera.
Photograph
okay,
kids,
yeah,
sorry.
We're blending martial arts and shooting here, so okay. Yeah.
So those things in little bits started equipping me for being able to deal with youth in general.
Okay, does that martial arts stuff ever come in handy? You ever have to take down somebody?
Nah, they're sweet kids. We would never have to do that.
Yeah, that was an art connection. I didn't know you were in martial arts. I enjoy photography and martial arts as well. So it's that stuff. We got to have a podcast on martial arts, I think, and religion at some point in time. So you mentioned you were protesting this. You know, you were kind of being called, and people were saying, hey, Scott, this is, you got to be doing this. What was the nature of that protest? I mean, because you were teaching kids martial arts and, you know, hanging out, I don't know, tossing the football or doing whatever. But what was, why were you protesting?
I think the term pastor has such weight for me that I just didn't feel qualified to do that. I still, honestly, I still don't. I always think there needs to be people that are more spiritual than I am that can do this. But, I don't, you know, you look, God uses people like that. And few people in the Bible volunteered to do what he wanted them to do. Yeah. He usually had to beat them over the head or shipwreck them or something to get them to do it. And he was kinder to me, but he was very persistent.
Wow. Okay. So that's kind of that calling in that field. And that's one of the other themes that we've talked to a number of other practitioners. And the thing that comes up quite occasionally, and I'm thinking about the podcast we had recently with Jeff Rose, our street preacher, is that issue of self-doubt. Is that you know, that's one of those constant things that's always lingering, is that, well, am I worthy of this? Should I really be doing this? Is this my calling? Am I doing a good job? How do you deal with that? I mean, do you still have those feelings, and how do you wrestle with that?
We just have to pray about it. I think that comes up pretty regularly. I mean, ministry in general is hard.
Yeah.
And it gets more difficult as I try to solve it on my own. My nature is to take inventory of my assets and take inventory of what the issues are and try to match them up first rather than pray first. And that's always a disaster. If I pray first and say, okay, Jesus, you got a problem. I don't know how to do this. How do we want to go ahead? Then we solve things.
Well, so that's very interesting. So you say, you know, this is not something that I do on my own, that you pray on it. So you're asking for spiritual guidance in the process. You're on a walk with Jesus, and that walk has to occur, but also probably other people in the ministry, right? You need a big support network.
Oh, yes. Yes. We have an amazing team of volunteers.
Mm-hmm. So it's not just something that you do alone. They say, Scott, go do you do with the kids, and we'll see you on Sunday and that.
No, we couldn't. I mean, youth ministry is really all about relationship, and you can only really have relationships with maybe 12 people. I mean, that's all Jesus really did, is he had in-depth relationships with 12 guys. Mm-hmm. Can't do much more, I don't think, in youth ministry. So you really, it's critical that we have a dependable team that love God and love students, and we do.
Well, let's talk about that ministry, and I want to restrict our conversation to older kids. You know, many churches obviously have some kind of nursery for infants or toddlers during the Sunday service, or, you know, a daycare center. And then there's also programs for elementary kids where, you know, you go play games, give some crayons, draw some pictures, talk about a Bible verse. But it's starting around middle school, so roughly 5th grade, 6th grade, maybe 11 years oldish or so. It seems that the role of youth ministry changes. And as the father of an 11-year-old, I'm kind of watching this happen. Am I correct in that assessment that somewhere around middle school, 5th, 6th, 7th grade, something different happens and the need for the ministry changes?
Yeah, I think, you know, they're starting to develop, their brain's developing in different ways so they can grasp certain concepts. We do make a big distinction. Our we call it junior high, is 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, and then high school goes 9th through 12th. And you know, we're just introducing God to them in junior high. So we don't expect them, we don't expect them to think too abstractly. It's more concrete, but we're introducing God to them. And then in high school, we develop more into, okay, now we know who God is. What does he expect from us? You know, how can we serve him?
So that's the general philosophy of this, or the general strategy of the program. Because I am not somebody who knows much about youth development. And so the general strategy is introducing God to the 6th, 7th graders, 8th graders. What does that entail? I mean, how does one introduce God? I mean, they heard God in 2nd grade, right? They come and here's some crayons and here's Bible, draw a picture of Jesus ministering to his flock or something. But what do you mean at that age level, introducing God?
Well, especially for a good portion of our kids are raised in the church. And so, you know, they're kind of under the assumption that they've inherited their faith from their parents, which isn't biblical. They have to make the decision.
Mm-hmm.
And so we start presenting it to them in that way. This is who Jesus is. And this is really, we tell them, this is the first real decision you get to make in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Because your parents don't tell you you're a Christian. You have to decide that you're a Christian. You have to decide to follow Jesus. It's not that it's something we don't inherit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, junior high students are just usually toward the 8th grade is when they start really being able to grasp what that means. And that's usually what kind of sends chills down the spine of parents too, because if you're raising your kid in a Christian home, maybe they're going to Christian school, you're doing devotionals, you're kind of holding your breath until that time when they take the faith for their own.
Yeah, it's, you always wonder what is going on. As a parent, I am hearing that. So you say around eighth grade, and that's interesting. So what is, I mean, my son is a sixth grader. He's 11 years old. So he's at the beginning of this process. Is there a sub-strategy to the general strategy with middle schoolers, that the kids that first come in, sixth graders, they're fresh off the sixth grade bus, and here they are as compared to eighth graders? Is there a path that you lead them through? What's the thought process there?
Well, again, it's all relational. So everything that we do in all of our aspects of ministry is to have the privilege of developing a relationship with the students. So the fact that we have games, the fact that we have outreach events and cool logos and t-shirts and fun stuff to do is to get them here so we can develop relationships with them so that we can introduce them to God. And that really continues, you know, through the whole youth program. Mm-hmm. They just invest more and more, hopefully, the more time they spend.
And logos are something that's really important. We often don't think about those. And we've talked with Matt Boswell before about the issue of naming Redemption Church. And names are important. They're your first contact, your first signal with the world. Now, we're sitting in the offices or the space that the church rents out here. And I'm looking on the wall to my left, and there's a big 412. Which is the middle school logo. So what is 412? How did that come about? What does that mean?
It's 1 Timothy 4:12, and it talks about don't let anybody look down on you because of your youth, but you're supposed to set the standard for how a Christian should live.
And why choose that one? I mean, it's kind of interesting. I can see where you're going with that, but give me the thought process here.
Yeah, it's to get them to start thinking of who they are as you. I mean, it actually uses the word youth in the Bible. Yeah, so they can say, okay, this is actually talking to me. It's not about some old men, you know, in biblical times. This is real. And we're a big one at Redemption Church of telling them that we don't have, it isn't the youth and then the church. Our youth are part of our church. So we have 11 through 18-year-olds that are part of our church. They happen to meet in this room, but they're also part of the greater body and meet with the big church as well.
Yeah, I want to come back to that point. That's an interesting one, that they meet at different places and at different times, but they have to be part of the church. So, but let's go back to 1 Timothy 4:12. It's not only about them making the decision, but it's also their relationship to the world. You pick that up in that quote too. And that's got to be a tough time for these middle schoolers. Peer pressure is really starting to kick in right now, right? You know, junior high, that was my wasted years in school because, man, you know, you're just worried about what everybody thinks about you. So was that part of the thought process too in choosing that?
Yeah. You know, we do this poll almost every year with our junior high students and have them fill out this questionnaire, and it's all different things. But one of the main questions is, what do you most fear in life? Mm-hmm. And these are, I've been giving this out for 10 years, and it goes out to children who their parents, I know, have cancer, and their parents are going through a divorce, and their parents are going to lose their house, and all these things. Out of all the students we've polled, I would say less than 10 of them had given an answer other than friends. The thing they fear most in the world is losing friends or not being popular. Mm-hmm. So that's a critical thing with junior high ministry, is having it a place where you can come alongside other junior high students and build friendships that carry not only, you know, at church, but through their neighborhood and at school, and that helps them grow. You know, as iron sharpens iron, so one student sharpens another. I paraphrase that a little bit, but you know, that's a really critical thing, and for youth, that they can come along. You know, peer pressure works both ways.
Yeah,
they can be pressured to, you know, toward evil things, or they can be held to a higher standard by hanging around with people that hold the same beliefs.
That's true. That's a good thing to think about, because we often think about peer pressure in a rather negative context, that, oh, you know, you're going off with the bad kids to do something. But, you know, peer pressure, again, too, is building your strong character. You become the person who relates to your peers and can possibly be a messenger out there. Is that a message that you're trying to get into these guys and gals?
For sure. Yeah, I think that they start ministering to people, you know, instantly. I think we're all called to minister in different ways, through evangelism and compassion and, you know, setting standards and standing up for people.
Mm-hmm. So let's continue on with the middle schoolers, and we'll come back to the high schoolers here in a second. But talk to me about how you actually go about and do this. What does your program look like? We know that the biggest challenge that they face seems to be that peer pressure, the fear of losing friends, as you've done this survey. How do you address that on a practical basis? I mean, what does a youth group session look like?
Well, we have usually one outreach event a month that's just fun. Mm-hmm. It's not, there's usually nothing spiritual connected with it. It's just a place where the students that are already in the program can invite their friends to a situation where they can say, hey, you know, Christians have a lot of fun. I mean, we have great, great times. So it might be a video scavenger hunt or...
What's a video scavenger hunt?
We break the kids up into teams. We assign them a driver and give them a video camera, and they go around town and have to videotape like somebody hugging a police officer or somebody kissing a duck or, you know, and so they have to figure these things out, and they come back and we watch the video. So it's those kind of things are just purely outreach to where the, you know, we can invite them to invite their unchurched friends.
Yeah. And what were some of the other events? I'm actually fishing for one that I know my son really liked, but let's see if you mention it.
Let's see. Our most popular one, and this is pretty amazing, is our 30-hour famine, which we the kids stop, and this is high school and junior high combined, but they stop eating on Friday at noon. They show up to our youth building at 7 o'clock that night, and we do games and, you know, different activities. Then we'll have a missionary come in about 10 and, you know, talk about wherever they're serving. Then they actually get a big cardboard box that we have stacked outside, and they go down on Main Street and set up camp. And the girls on one side of Main Street, the guys on the other, and they camp there all night. And then we get them up 7 o'clock in the morning, they clean up, and then they do service projects till about noon. Mm-hmm. And then in the afternoon, they go and fundraise for World Vision. Mm-hmm. So they go for 30 hours without eating, and most kids haven't gone for 3.5 hours without eating. So it's a huge growth experience for them. Huge hardship. I mean, normally we have it in February, which where we live in February, many times they'll wake up in the sleeping bag, they'll have frost on it.
Uh-huh.
But this is our most popular event.
Wow, that's really fascinating.
It's really cool.
Let me ask you technically, again, like I really like the How It's Made type of series and see how these things are done. And I know we've announced that in our church several times, and I sit there and think about that, and I go, how do you supervise that? I mean, people should know here who are listening in that when we talk going sleeping on Main Street, we're not downtown Seattle here. We're Duval, Washington, roughly population 6,000. It is more or less a one-street town with some suburban and rural houses behind it. But, you know, still in this day and age with the parents that we have around here, they're like, whoa, my kid's sleeping on the street in a box? What? Where's the safety net?
Right. It's growth for the students and the parents. typically, we have a lot of different volunteers that coordinate this event, and one of them is our security team.
Okay.
And I usually get four of the biggest guys in the church, and they stay up all night and walk it. And so, yeah, it's actually very interesting because sometimes, like at 2 o'clock in the morning, some of the bars will empty, and you know the people will be walking down there, and they want to know what's going on there. So we actually get to talk to them, and the kids learn through seeing the leaders interact with these people that. You know, this is completely foreign to them. So we say all these kids, and we have 80 kids out here that are sleeping on the street and going without food for 30 hours to raise money for underprivileged people around the world. So it's just a win for the community, and it's great for the kids.
Yeah, real big outreach too, again, to the bar crowd that's pulling out. And have you had any problems with that at all or anything?
Never. We had one time where a car was kind of racing down the main street's 25 miles an hour. He was racing down the main street, and one of my leaders who has a huge heart for kids and also used to play left tackle for the Snohomish Vikings actually just jumped out in the middle of the street, and the car locked up his brakes. He just drove real slowly around.
Well, you know, the Snohomish Vikings are a pretty tough football team. So
that's right.
There you have it. The other thing my son really liked was the ice blocking.
Yes.
That you've done.
Ice blocking is awesome event. There's a park in Seattle that I won't name it because I'm not sure that we're supposed to use it like we do, but it has a great big grassy knoll, and every kid shows up there with a 5-pound block of ice and goes sledding.
Yeah. And it was August or something, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
In the middle of summer. Yep. Yeah, that's a very cool one. So, okay. So you got these outreach events. And where do you get the ideas for these? Are these, do the kids brainstorm them themselves? Do you pull them from ideas you've seen at other churches? Do you get them from the internet? Where are you getting these ideas from?
Yes to all those things. I go to youth events or, you know, have friends that are youth pastors. So they'll kind of share different ideas. And, you know, it's funny how some things that will work here just, you know, are a total disaster if you try them in another state and vice versa. So like one of our great things right now that we're doing with junior high students is we challenge them to memorize the first three chapters of the book of James, which we do this every other year. If they memorize those three chapters, then we take them on a road trip to Disneyland, but they have to buy their tickets and they have to pay for their food. So really we're just providing the vans and we give the floors to sleep on. But this is a great, great success that we average maybe 25 students each year that do this. Yeah. But friends of mine have tried that at other churches and they just won't do it. So I don't know. I don't know if it's the culture in different churches or
I couldn't imagine that flies well in Anaheim, California. Oh, you're going to Disneyland, all right. Oh, you could take them up to the Seattle Space Needle. I don't think that kid wants to go there. Okay, so you got these outreach events and you're pulling around different ideas. And so those are once a month. What do you do in between time?
Yeah, weekly, we typically meet 2 hours on a weeknight for junior high. It's on Wednesday nights. The first 10 or 15 minutes is just kind of them socializing. Then we do games for maybe a half hour. We'll do some kind of fun things, usually some kind of challenge, you know, like a minute to win it. We'll have some kind of embarrassing thing, that eating a pie in so many seconds or that kind of thing without using your hands. Then we'll do worship. And then typically a talk, and then they break out into small groups, and they'll be anywhere between 5 and 12 kids in a small group. And that way it helps us to have the kids engage a little bit more on a personal level with the leaders, not only developing the idea that we talked about, but also developing the relationships.
And how does that work out with 11, 12, 13-year-olds? I mean, are they're
pretty boys good or girls?
Well, yeah, actually, tell me the difference. This is very interesting.
Well, girls tend to be a little more verbal than boys and a little more focused. So we just kind of curtail it to that. Typically, a girls group their discussion might go on for 20 minutes, 30 minutes. Not unheard of, they'll go for 40 minutes. Boys, maybe 5, maybe 10. So the male leaders have to be a lot more creative in how they engage the guys. And sometimes it's interesting when I'm walking around and overhearing the groups, what the conversation goes into, just kind of keeping them in, reeling them back in, letting them go out a little bit, reeling them back in.
How in-depth do these conversations become? Because I'm trying to think of, you know, my own 11-year-old having this in-depth, you know, personal reflection on the book of Titus.
Well, depth is relative, I guess. So it's just a way for them to explore in a level that is more customized to them. And each group is probably going to be different. If it's all 8th grade girls, and maybe 8th grade girls that are very knowledgeable about the Bible, it's going to be a different level than if you had 6th grade boys that don't come from a church background. It'll be much, much more basic. But that's what's great about the small groups is you can customize it to who's in there.
Yeah. No, I can see how that works out. What kind of themes are you addressing or topics? Because you mentioned, you know, break out into these groups. And what did you do last week in these groups?
Last week we were talking about gifts of the Spirit. So just kind of going over the 9 gifts of the Spirit and, you know, how if those of us that have chosen to follow Jesus, those are given to us and these are the ways that they'll start to manifest in your life. So it was more just kind of general knowledge that and many of them probably didn't know about.
Okay. Well, let's move on to high school students. Their challenges start to change when they're 14, 15, 16 years old. And what are their main challenges? You say you've surveyed some of these folks. So what are you seeing there?
They're still very relationally oriented, but you know, the temptations for them increase, the pressures increase. That's one of the things I was trying to think of, what is different from when I was a kid. I never heard of self-mutilation in how it is today until maybe 15 years ago. That I'd never heard of it. And that's now it's very, very common. So those kind of things manifest themselves a little bit in junior high, but much more so in high school.
Let me ask you this. If you're taking a look at some of the kids that you get in the junior high ministry and they're sticking with you, are they more immune from some of these challenges, or some of these challenges for the high school kids that you get, they're just, you know, kids that just dropped in when they were 15 or 16 years old? Is, do you see some effect of the earlier program on how they manage and deal with things later on?
Well, that's what we hope for. I suppose you could make the argument either way. I think generally, if you have a basis for them, you know, if you start building on this base of who God is, what he wants for you, and, you know, how much he loves you, then hopefully that's influencing the decisions you make. And when you're met with challenges, you know, self-destructive behavior, then you know, you go back to who he is, and he loves you so much. This is how valuable you are. You don't have to surrender to this because let's show you again. Let's remind you again.
And you said with the high school students, you know, the strategy is what God has planned for you. And how does that play out in your program? Now, what is the name of the high school program to begin with?
Revolution.
Revolution. Why was Revolution changed or named, excuse me?
We just, most students want to be significant. I think that typically in society we park our students, especially at church. I think traditionally we've kind of parked junior high and high school. Okay, you guys go be quiet and sit over there, and then when you get older, we'll kind of deal with you. Where we want our students to take their faith seriously now. They're part of the church now. We want you to revolutionize everything. We want you to revolutionize the community for him. We want you to revolutionize the church. Have us not be stale. We want you to take your faith, put it in action. You know, Jesus with skin on. We talk about that all the time. Be Jesus with skin on. So go be Jesus wherever you are. We do a thing now about our church, Redemption Church. We call it Church Without Walls. So each week we have a little segment. All right, who's seen Redemption Church around? And so somebody will raise their hand and they'll give an example of where, what they did or what they saw, how Redemption Church was working in the community. Because I say, wherever you guys are, if you're a member of Redemption Church, if you attend Redemption Church, wherever you go, that's where the church is. So if you're at the high school, that's where it is. If you're at Subway, that's where it is. If you're on the bus, that's where it is. So that's a really cool thing that they'll stand up and share something that they saw, you know, one of their peers. Oh, I saw so-and-so ministering in this way. Or
I should mention that when you said Subway, that was a sandwich shop. Duval doesn't actually have a Subway underneath.
But if they did, Redemption Church would be there.
Yeah, absolutely. So what kind of activities do you do with the high schoolers? Is it significantly different than what you do with the middle schoolers? Do you do the same thing, you know, once a month outreach?
Yes, we do outreach once a month.
And is that combined with the junior high kids?
A couple times a year. The bigger events that are suitable for both, we'll do it that way. But typically we separate them just because, you know, there's no greater chasm between a sixth grade boy and a 12th grade girl. I mean, that is just like, no time in your life are you that far away from another human. Yeah. So it's tough to combine them too much because, you know, we want to curtail it to what each one, you know, what appeals to them. But we do all kinds of things. We'll go to hockey games or we'll do fun things. I'm trying to think of what our next one is. We're doing, there's a place in town, the Trampoline Dodgeball. We play dodgeball on trampolines.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the one of the places that people get injured the most at.
That's right.
So, you know, be careful out there. We'll be praying for you on that one. How about the weekly meetings? So outside of the outreach events, what does a weekly meeting for these high schoolers look like?
The weekly meeting for the high schools is structured almost the same as junior high, virtually the same. And we may even share the topic between the two groups. Mm-hmm. But the questions and the depth is just elevated quite a bit more. The discussion times, you know, are generally much, much more productive just because they can process in the abstract a lot easier and they're more verbal.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of thinking about what we talked about earlier was getting the students, getting the high schoolers, getting the middle schoolers to know that they're part of the church. One thing that I've noticed is that when I come in for Sunday services, a lot of the high school kids are up there in front, right? Which that's kind of cool. I mean, the high school kids might always like to be in front, although I kind of always like to sit in the back. But I mean, that's kind of really neat. So how do you bring that group that meets on the Wednesday night or you're out doing hockey games or something, how do you bring them in with the adult population of the church?
Well, we're really blessed by our church. On Sunday mornings, it's very, very accessible to students, even junior high students. So they can usually relate to everything that's being taught, everything that's being shared. The culture of our youth group is we stress a lot of service. So actually, a lot of our high school students serve during Sunday mornings as well in teaching Sunday school, running sound or lighting and that kind of stuff. So our church actually depends quite a bit on our youth in how its daily Sunday operation mm-hmm. goes.
And who are these kids? Now, when I talk about these kids are here at church, it sounds like, well, they're the families of the people in church. And you mentioned that the bulk of the students in these youth groups are from families that go to the church. But I've also heard you mention that you're getting some kids from families that their parents don't go to this church or might not be churchgoers altogether. Tell me about the mix.
Yeah, I would say probably right now 70% of our students either go to our church or their parents either go to their parents go to our church, or they may go to another church, but they come to our youth group. But the rest of them, typically, they come from unchurched families.
And that's 30%. That's a number higher than I would expect. How do they get involved?
Their friends. Their friends invite them, sure.
And that's really interesting, because that's got to be, I mean, again, to put myself in the brain of a 16-year-old boy and think, okay, I'm going to ask my friends to the church group. That's got to be a hard sell.
Well, it would be, but again, everything that we do to bring them in. So it might be, say, hey, do you want to come to church with me on Sunday morning? No, thanks. Hey, we're gonna go ice blocking in Seattle. You guys want to come? Okay, we're in. So then when they come to that group, then they're introduced to all the other students. Oh, I didn't know you guys go to the church here. Cool. You know, yeah, you ought to come on Wednesday night. And then introduced to the leaders. Oh, yeah, that, you know, they're not scary. They're not boring.
Yeah.
They're fun. You know, these guys are great.
Yeah, that's got to be the biggest obstacle, to think that you're not boring. Because churchy people, they just sit around and they're on their knees and pray all the time and, you know, and watch the sugar in their coffee, because that would be too, and it's decaf coffee. So that's got to be a really big leeway or a segue into bringing these students in. How are there differences between the students who are here with their parents, their families are involved in a church or another local church, versus the kids who are not or come from families that are not church?
Yeah, there are some. Sometimes we get kids that are just, I mean, this is just, they don't know who, I mean, maybe they've heard the word Jesus, but they have no idea who he is. They don't know that he's God, you know, so you're just kind of starting from scratch with them, where the kids in the church have, you know, certainly heard it in Sunday school, that kind of thing. But I mean, deep down, they are who they are. They're still trying to figure out who they are in high school, particularly.
Do you get any concern by the parents of these kids? We live in the Pacific Northwest, which is not highly churched. It's one of the least churched places in the country. And it's not only that people don't go, but there is a fairly militant atheist population in the area and some degree of hostility toward organized religion. Do you get any blowback from some of these parents, from these kids who are not churched and they're showing up at Redemption Church Youth Group?
Yeah. I don't get a lot, but I don't know that they would tell me if they had a problem. Okay. They probably just wouldn't see them. But we do have students that are allowed to come during the week, but aren't allowed to go on Sunday morning.
Okay. Well, that's really kind of interesting, because I would wonder how that plays out in one of these households. Is like, when I was a teenager, I'd go out on one night and my folks say, oh, where are you going? And I say, oh, we're just going to go hang out. But, you know, just say, yeah, I'm going to go hang out at the church. What? Huh?
You sneak out the window to go to church.
Yeah, I was like, okay, kid, you're sneaking out to go to church. No, you're going somewhere else, aren't you? Because I know how that is. But okay, so that tends to be interesting. What about the other thing that the youth group in this church does, but I know a lot do as well, are church camps or retreats, where you're going off many, many, many miles away and you're camping in cabins and you're away from your parents. And what is the logic or behind that week or a couple days that you're doing that? Is that different than the daily thing? Are you trying to, or weekly, meet once a week? Are you trying to accomplish something more at one of these 4 or 5 day camps?
Logic and camp. I don't know that we've ever used those words together. It's just a way to have, you know, a concentrated contact with them. I mean, when we're with them for 4 or 5 or 6 days, mm-hmm. it's a way, typically we don't know who's going to be there, but it's typically the same makeup as any, you know, weeknight. So there's going to be a number of kids that never heard the gospel, and there's going to be a huge percentage that know about Jesus. So we have to kind of structure the speaking times to get everybody at a baseline, you know, to kind of bring them up and then kind of expand from there. But amazing things happen at camp. I mean, it's amazing how many adults you talk to and you ask what, you know, when did you accept Christ? A huge, huge number of them say at camp. A lot of spiritual decisions happen at camp, whether it's accepting Christ for the first time or rededicating their life or, you know, starting to take your faith serious, whatever it is.
Why do you think that is?
Well, we've been accused of using the same techniques they use in brainwashing, where we keep them up all night and feed them sugar.
Yeah, that's the old church camp movie or exactly. something. Yeah.
I think a number of things. You have so many people devoting so much time to that, you know, and so we have everything orchestrated to where there's, you know, great fun times, but then when you're sitting out, you know, under the stars talking about God, all these things come into play. Plus, we have tons of people praying for that camp that week too. So, you know, it's just all these things kind of come together in this wonderful, holy, you know, mesh.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine just too that just the time together with everybody else and seeing how everybody else engages is one of the things is for the weekly group, you come in for 2 hours, but that's, you know, it takes a while to break down some of the barriers in 2 hours. But, you know, when you're with somebody 24 hours a day, yeah, things start changing. You probably learn a lot more about each other, and there the peer pressure can take on new dimensions and possibly in very positive ways.
Yeah, not only that, but another way that I think it's changed since when I was a kid is, you know, C.S. Lewis talked about the kingdom of noise. Now the kingdom of noise is so rampant because you very seldom see a student without some kind of input. You know, that they have headphones on, they have a TV on, there's music in the background, everything is going on. Where camp, we actually restrict, you know, like iPods and phones and that kind of stuff. So you kind of take that away. This may be, for a lot of kids, it may be the first time they've ever gone for an hour where they're just able to talk to somebody or be part of a group that way. And when we put it together and you have them for, you know, 72 hours or something like that, I mean, you have tremendous possibility to where they can consider the things of God in an environment they're unfamiliar with. You know, it's a new camp or whatever, and they're not distracted by all these other things.
There's got to be some challenges at those camps, and I'm thinking homesickness. Having been worked at a scout camp and been an assistant scout master taking a troop out to you know, a week away from the parents and stuff, how do you deal with that issue of homesickness?
We deal with it once in a while. It doesn't come up very often. I mean, we've never lost a kid to homesickness. Never had one lost.
That's awesome.
But, you know, you usually just talk it through. And frequently the parents will alert us to it ahead of time. So we'll start to develop the relationship with their camp leader before we actually get on the bus, to where they start, you know, being friended with them, developing a relationship. And the other thing is they're going all the time, particularly junior high camp. We have a rule at junior high camp that if you go for 5 minutes without something happening, sound the alarm, because something's going to happen whether you engineered or not. Yeah. And so they're so busy, they don't typically have time to get homesick.
No, that's one of the easiest cures for homesickness is not to think about home, because you're just so engaged in something all the time that it really makes a big difference. So there's homesickness about kids. What about the parents? I mean, we are in a region of the country that is notorious for helicopter parents that, you know, all the time. And I don't know if this is particular to Pacific Northwest where I've become a parent, and or if it's throughout the country, but it just seems more and more parents are hovering around their kids, and it needs to be, you know, youth ministry is not only for the youths, it's for the parents to say, hey, let go. There's some decisions that they have to make on their own. How do you manage that?
Well, we certainly see ourselves as partners with the parents and subordinate to the parents. You know, we want parents to come alongside us. I love when parents come to me and say, you know, tell me about an issue their child has, or, hey, is there any way that, you know, you could do this that might my kid might better relate to the youth group? I'm very, very excited about that. But I know it is traumatic frequently for parents to be, you know, 4 days away from their kid and their kid doesn't have a cell phone. That's like they go through withdrawals.
Yeah. Is there, even with the weekly groups or some of the activities that you do, is there ever a time that a parent is around way too much and you have to say, hey, you know, step back, this is development time?
No, I haven't run into that. We do on occasion have parents that have children in the program become youth leaders. Mm-hmm. And one of the rules when they come in and when I tell them, that's great, we'd love to have you, but you are not a parent during that time. So if your son does something that he knows he's not supposed to do, you don't get to discipline him any different than you would anybody else. You can tell me and I'll tell him to knock it off. But we set that aside because otherwise that tends to crush any expression for them, any real involvement, if they feel like they're always being monitored like that. And it's worked out really well.
Parents yeah, that's have. True. It's a time for them to be leaders, and they have to make the mistakes. And okay.
And we don't put the children in the leaders, in those parents' small groups, anything like that.
Yeah. Let's talk about parent volunteering, because you are one person, and you say one person can't do it alone. I need a team. Where does the rest of the team come from? Are these, you know, regular paid folks from the church, or are they volunteers? Do they come from parents? Do they come from, you know, older kids that have graduated from the program? They're 20, 22 years old now. Where are you getting these folks?
Well, all our youth leaders are volunteers. We have about 35 of them right now between the two programs.
Now, so 35 volunteers. How many kids do you have? If you say five, I mean, that's a pretty, you know, six on one ratio. But actually, how many kids are involved? I should have asked this earlier, in the junior high group and then the high school group.
Combined, we have about 140 active.
Wow. Okay. So that's pretty big. And, you know, we're talking a congregation about the size of, you know, 500, 550 or so. And so 140 kids, 35 volunteers. Where are you pulling these folks from?
God brings them in. Some of them are people that have children in the program. A number of them don't. A number of them have grown kids that but they just have a real passion for youth. And they have that wisdom of going through things with their children that they can, you know, come alongside them. What we're also blessed with, we have a program here, Leaders in Training. We call them LTs. So the majority of our junior high leaders are actually high school sophomores and above that go through training, orientation, and then supervision, mentoring. And they are just tremendous. In my opinion, it's one of the best programs we have at the church, because they grow in a fantastic rate in their spiritual development. They're also a tremendous blessing for our leadership here, but to the junior high students, and a great, great role models for the junior high students to emulate. Yeah. And they're like rock stars. I mean, the fact that if you're a seventh grade boy and an 11th grade boy talks to you and remembers your name next week, you probably will never forget that.
Yeah. That is really something that I've noticed too about the upper school or high school kids in our church, is that they are active and they actually seek out some of the younger kids. And as you mentioned, there's that gulf between high school and junior high that it could be huge, and nobody wants to interact with one another. So, I mean, is there any way you encourage that, or is it just happening? Obviously, you know, one person does it and people see things happen. And I mean, how does that happen?
Well, it's definitely a culture. To now with the high school students, they usually come to us before we have to recruit them. Yeah. And, you know, because they just see, they were touched by the high school students when they were in junior high.
Yeah.
So they want to be part of that. And my daughter went through, you know, the 7 years of the program, and she had it marked on her calendar in the sixth grade when she got to apply the summer before her sophomore year. I mean, she knew she wanted to be an LT and just looked for that. And there's a lot of kids like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's another question. And this is one of the challenges that we're facing, too, is that, you know, through a junior high or a high schooler's life, there's ebbs and flows, right? You're gonna be really engaged sometimes. Other times you're not. And you disappear for a few months. And how do you manage that? How do you keep people involved? And what happens when they start to fade away?
Well, we assign each one of our leaders. We call them within the group, we call them shepherds, and we give them a flock. So each leader has X number of students that they're to keep tabs on.
About how many is that?
It depends, kind of going in and out. Right now, it's about four per leader. Mm-hmm. And so if they don't show up for a few weeks, you know, we'll call them and see what's going. What we found, and this is, and you haven't asked me this question, but the biggest challenge that I've seen, at least in our community, for youth ministry is happened in about the last 6 years. And that is extracurricular things, mm-hmm. taking precedent over church things. Yeah. And so I get it regularly that, hey, you know, I haven't seen you. Where you been? I'm in select whatever, or I'm taking martial arts, or I'm taking dance, or whatever. And that, for many, many parents, many Christian parents, that is a priority over youth group.
Yeah, no, that's a really good thing to mention, because part of the extracurricular rhythm of life, especially at public schools, doesn't revolve around church groups. And right. Surprisingly, at private Christian schools too, everybody kind of knows around here Wednesday is youth group night, so don't schedule stuff. But you know, I've seen a number of private Christian schools trying to jam everything in every week, have something for everybody, and parents, a place that we go, rising up and rebelling a little bit, say, hey, Wednesdays, that's off limits time. But
amen. Yeah. I haven't heard that yet. That's wonderful. I've been praying for that for 5 years.
Yeah, so dealing with those extracurricular activities and keeping people engaged. And what do you find? I mean, what really works in keeping somebody engaged, and what really works in transforming them?
Well, I mean, honestly, it falls to the parents. I mean, nowhere in the Bible does it say that youth pastors are supposed to raise children in the ways of God. I mean, it definitely falls on the parents' shoulders. So if the parents, you know, make God a priority, if they model the behavior, spiritual behavior they want their kids to see, it typically will happen. What's common, I just finished a book by Chap Clark. He's a professor at Fuller, called Hurt 2.0, and he talks about that a lot of us as parents have deceived ourselves that we're devoting all this time. We are so busy, we're so devoted to our children, driving them to events where other people are raising them. So we drive them to the martial arts school and have somebody teach them martial arts. We drive them to the pitching coach and have them teach them how to pitch. We drive them to dance class. We drive them to church and have them give them their fill of God, where the parents are really just spending a lot of time in the van taking them to the next event rather than investing them. So where I see kids generally that are most grounded spiritually is the parents take a paramount interest in their spiritual development. I've never had a parent come to me and make a big deal about, guess, you know, my student just made some kind of spiritual accomplishment. You know, he just memorized the first chapter of James. But I have them come up to me all the time that, you know, Johnny just got, you know, this merit badge, or Johnny just got this trophy or whatever. And I think, wow, what message are we sending the kids that the thing that gets mentioned to their peers is that, you know, some sporting event.
Well, that's a good point. Is there any individual counseling that goes on as part of your job, that with one-on-one with students who are having difficulties or hard times, that maybe something's going on at home?
Sure. Yeah. That happens quite a bit.
And how do you manage that? How do you deal with that in the general? I don't want to ask specifics, but in general.
Yeah, it just depends what the issue is. You know, if it's an issue with their parents, you know, we just kind of go to the Bible. Well, okay, what does it say? We had one the other day, and, you know, there was a punishment that was delivered that they thought were unfair. And so he was going to try to solution. I said, well, are you honoring your parent? And he said, well, no, they don't deserve honor. And I said, well, does it say that you're to honor your parents who deserve honor? No, it says you're supposed to honor your parents, whether they deserve honor or not is the implication. So, you know, if it's something like on that we can just, you know, send them back the Bible. What does the Bible say about it? We'll do that in-house. If it's something more serious, you know, if somebody is contemplating suicide or self-mutilation, that kind of thing, we have a list of counselors that we refer to.
So does some of that weigh heavy on you? I mean, as a pastor, you deal with the fun stuff. You deal with the ice blocking and the, you know, games that you play all the time. But I mean, there's got to be some pretty weighty moments. And how do you handle those?
Close the door to my office and go cry. I mean, we just pray about them. And the times that I meet with my leadership, you know, we enjoy each other. We have a great time. But so much of it is just our hearts break for these students because they have such burdens they have to carry, such challenges.
And I want to bring that too, and this is a legal issue, and this is one of the more controversial or sticky issues to deal with as a youth minister. But recent scandals in the news dealing with child abuse, and that we've seen that in the Catholic Church, but we should also note that it's a problem that affects all denominations. No denomination is really immune from this. And I also want to note the related issue of false accusations, because this can get in the news and kids can say, hey, you know, I can get some leverage in doing this. So, you know, being a youth minister can really put yourself in a vulnerable spot. You're dealing with weighty issues with, you know, hey, let's face it, kids that are going through some pretty difficult emotional junk and changes in their life. So there's vulnerabilities on all sides of this equation here. And so what are your thoughts on dealing with this? Some of the legal issues, some of the spiritual issues that need to be raised with all of this. How do you guys handle it?
Well, we have standards, we have procedures in the ministry as far as like if you were to meet with someone, a student, you want to do it in a public place. Mm-hmm. You know, you would never be in a vehicle with someone of the opposite sex. All those, you know, just normal protections. Of course, everyone in our staff and volunteers have been background checked through the state. Mm-hmm. But basically, it's just one of the things you have to deal with. I mean, it's worth the risk. In our society, in a litigious society, or you know, just false accusations coming in, it's just one of the things you deal with.
Now, you've been at this for quite a while now. Have you seen some changes on that front? Is it getting more difficult to manage? Is it becoming easier? Or what?
I honestly haven't noticed any changes.
Okay. Yeah.
It seems like we see more reported, you know, mm-hmm. cases of that, but I don't know if it's just the news picking up on it more or not.
Yeah, no, I noticed I've gone, you know, through scouts, and I grew up in the 70s as a Boy Scout, and now as a scoutmaster, assistant scoutmaster for my son's troop. I mean, it's just, you know, really much more heightened awareness. Now, maybe I wasn't paying attention in the 70s over that stuff, but it just seems that, you know, a lot more protections are put in place, which is probably a good thing.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So I think that's good. So let's go ahead and end up on an upbeat note. And yeah, you know, we talked about some of the weighty burdens that you have. We talked about some of these more difficult legal issues. And, you know, there's a lot of big responsibilities that you face here. But, you know, there's got to be some really big highlights to this program. Otherwise, you wouldn't be continuing on doing it. Give us one of your funniest moments. What stands out in your mind as just a complete belly gusher?
Well, few weeks past Halloween, and on Halloween we do an event called Hunger Busters where the kids can dress up, and then we go door to door and ask for donations for a local food bank, so canned foods. And I showed up to that this year, and there was a sixth grade student that was standing there, and he was dressed up exactly like me. So he had I have a gray soul patch, and I always wear a hat and a vest, and he was dressed up just like me, and then he had a sign on there that said Pastor Scott. So that was a pretty funny moment.
That was funny, but it's got to be inspirational too, because you know you think, you know, kids dress up as their superheroes or people they want to image, and then all of a sudden it's like you stop and you say, "Whoa, I've had an impact there."
Yeah,
did you have that moment?
It was. I wanted to tell him to aim higher, but it was very flattering that he did that.
Yeah, because I've had that experience too. When I teach methodology at the University of Washington, I wear a lab coat, and this is for graduate students. It's kind of goofy and silly. And I always wonder, you know, do they think it's really goofy and silly? And the, you know, these are 22, 23, 24-year-old graduate students, they're going to, you know, think. But yeah, it was a couple years ago at a Halloween party. A couple of them came dressed as me. And, you know, you kind of, they're worrying, oh, is Gil going to get mad about this? No, actually, you're kind of touched by that, because you show that you've really made an impact there. So have there been any other really inspirational moments that stand out where you say, wow, this is, you know, it's all coming together, and I've really made a difference, and things are really changing in somebody's life?
Yeah, when you hear, a lot of times we'll ask our high school students to give testimonies, and you know, when they share where they came from. We had a young man who I really respect and love, and he gave one a few weeks ago and talked about, you know, the drug abuse issues he had in his life, and he just came to a camp actually and got saved at a camp, and then he actually mentioned, you know, well, he was in my Bible study and how much, you know, that meant to him. And you know, you hear that kind of stuff, and for me, you know, it's hard for me not to cry. You know, I hear that, because mm-hmm. you think, okay, well, I can put up with the parental calls, I can put up with the late, you know, the all-nighters and all those kind of things. If you do see that, okay, God's using me, that stuff's getting through.
Yeah, that one moment that just, wow. And those moments must not just be rare. I mean, they come pretty frequently. I mean, is there?
Yeah. I mean, God really blesses us. But to be honest, if I got one of those every 10 years, I'd still do it.
Wow, yeah.
It's worth it.
It's worth it. That powerful. And then, you know, thinking about that, and thinking about that student that you were just talking about, and again, you've been at this for quite a while, and I mean, you get people coming back to you 5-10 years later and say, you know, that was youth group. That was special.
Yeah, one of the great things that you get to see is how students change their lives, you know. So now they're young adults. We have, I don't know how many, probably a dozen young adults that are full-time missionaries now that have come through the youth program.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just really cool that, you know, you were a part of their life, and, you know, God spoke to them through the youth group, and you got to be there. I mean, that's just awesome. It's a privilege.
Well, as I mentioned in a few other podcasts before, we do reach out to a number of young people, homeschoolers and high school students, some college students. And to wrap around and end up our discussion here, we talked at the beginning of our podcast about when you were that 20-year-old. And he's, I don't want to have anything to do with this. And but, you know, there's some people that I know that are contemplating youth ministry as a profession or a career, and, you know, looking back and being able to impart some wisdom on to those folks. What would you say to them?
Well, I think schooling, I mean, I wish I had more schooling when I was younger. So I think schooling is really important. But if I were to do it, I would probably find youth programs that you really respect and have a lot of credibility in the community throughout the country. And I would go to them and say, hey, I'll pay you $5,000 if I can hang out here and intern. And I think that money would probably be better spent shadowing somebody that's doing it already than would be on education. No offense to any professors in the room.
Oh, that's okay. It's you know, one of the things I love interviewing, you know, people who are in the trenches, as I say, the practitioners, is that, you know, so much of your learning doesn't necessarily take place in the classroom. It really takes place out there in the world when you have to experience stuff. And, you know, I've known that through my own political science training, and you can learn all the theories you want about running a campaign, but, you know, when it comes down to it, you got to provide the donuts and have the coffee. It's something like that. And you learn by watching other people do that kind of stuff. I guess the lesson is get involved. And Scott, we want to thank you for your involvement in Redemption Church, and also want to thank you for your time here on Research on Religion.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
And as a special bonus to today's podcast with Scott Thompson, we actually have a member of the Redemption Church Youth Group who happens to be my son, Victor Gill. So I would like to introduce everybody out there who listens to Research on Religion to Victor Gill. Victor, can you say hello?
Hello.
Victor, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am 11, almost 12, in sixth grade.
Okay.
I was recently eligible to join the Duval Church Youth Group, but when we split from our denomination, I moved to the Redemption Church Youth Group called 412.
Okay. So, and what age were you eligible to join the youth group?
Age 11, going into sixth grade.
So going into sixth grade. So that was kind of near the end of your fifth grade?
Right after sixth grade. Fifth grade ended.
So in kind of June or something like
that.
Okay. Well, tell us about the weekly youth group meetings. Now, you guys always met on a Wednesday night, and you would meet for about how long? You remember?
About 2 hours.
Okay. And what were some of the things that went on during that two-hour period?
We'd have worship where we'd usually sing 2 to 3 songs. We'd have announcements of stuff coming up. We'd usually play a game. What else?
What kind of games did you play?
Mostly capture the flag, soccer, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And what were some of the messages that you guys got? Do you remember some of the messages maybe back, way back in June or something?
Way back in June, I remember that we talked about, how Jesus had the power to bring people from who had faith back from the dead, and how he did that with Lazarus.
Okay, that's pretty cool. And so did you do this, did you have somebody gave a sermon like they have in church, or did you break up into little discussion groups? What'd you do?
A little from column A, a little from column B.
Okay.
We started with a big sermon, everybody together. Read from the Bible, taught more meaning, taught how it went into our lives. Then we broke into little groups, and the leaders asked us questions.
And how big were those groups?
Usually about 5 to 7 kids.
Okay, that's pretty cool. And then who led the group? Was it one of the older guys or gals in the thing, or was it like a high school student?
It would usually be in one of the adult leaders with a high schooler or two helping out.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes when there weren't much adult leaders, it was a high schooler leading the group.
Okay. And what were some of the other themes that you talked about in some of these groups?
We talked about heaven.
Mm-hmm.
We just asked questions on how we can make our faith stronger from each message that we were given.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about just how great it is to have a God who loves us so much that he sent his son to save us.
That's really cool. So when you got there, you come to the Wednesday night group, did they start originally or start right off with a sermon, or did you guys play a game, run around?
We'd usually play a game just to tire us all out.
Oh, so you know the purpose of it, don't you?
Yeah.
Not just to have fun, but to get you all tired out so you can sit and listen to the sermon. Yeah. Well, that's kind of cool. How'd you, and did you know a bunch of kids at this youth group?
When I just went in, I only knew two or three.
Mm-hmm.
But as I went more and more, I met more kids.
Mm-hmm.
And became friends with more of them.
Okay, so it was pretty fun meeting new kids. And did you find it easy to make new friends at the youth group?
Yeah.
Okay. So that was your night. You did for 2 hours. You played some games. You had a sermon. You broke off into discussion groups. You did that. What other things do you do outside of the youth group with the youth group or outside of the Wednesday night meeting?
Well, sometimes we'll have activities every so often. Like one of them was ice blocking, where we went to a park in Seattle and sat on ice blocks and rode down a hill.
Okay, and what biblical lesson did you draw from that?
Have fun.
Okay, I guess that was pretty good. So it's just, you know, think about that outing. You went ice blocking. Did you guys do any Bible discussion there, or did you just sit on the ice and slide down the hill?
Sit on the ice, slide down the hill, and then you throw it into the water when you're done.
Oh, okay, so that was pretty cool. You actually came home with an extra ice block or two.
Three.
Three. Yeah, I remember. We still have one of them in our freezer outside. Yep. So, okay. One of the other things that you did this past summer was go to the youth summer camp. And where'd you guys go?
I can't really remember the name, but I know it was out in eastern Washington by Ancient Lakes.
Okay, it's out by Ancient Lakes. And so what were some of the activities there? That was about 3 days, right?
Yeah.
Three roughly. Or 4 days? Yeah. And what were some of the activities you guys did there?
Well, we'd always have a morning and night sermon
mm-hmm.
from a special guest speaker from Arizona.
Ooh, that's kind of cool. Somebody coming up all the way from the south to the state of Washington. Neat.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then the first two full days we had there, we went out to a lake and we went inner tubing. We had a giant inner tube we just hooked to the bottom of the lake so we could climb on it and play King of the Hill.
Okay, what was the lesson of King of the Hill, biblically?
Strongest man triumphs?
I guess so. I don't know. those games are just for fun, right? You know,
yeah.
Just getting to meet other people and new people. Okay, so what other stuff did you do?
We had popsicles.
No, popsicles are important, yeah. So I remember there was a part of the video that we saw, because they made a video and they showed it at church the next weekend, where you guys were like sliding on stuff and there was like food and mud and what was that all about?
That was probably the water park on our last stay there for 2 to 3 hours.
Okay.
What you saw with sliding was probably the wakeboarding thing, where you see how long you can wakeboard.
I thought I saw something where they had they used an old pool or slip and slide, and they put a bunch of gunk and stuff on there.
Oh, the soggy pancake game.
Oh, the soggy pancake game, yeah.
So, we go in the giant circle and hold hands, and you try to be the last man standing by getting other people to touch it or break hand connections.
Mm-hmm. Now, I would assume that comes out directly from the Gospel of Luke, right?
Probably.
Okay. Well, you know, the old ancient pancake sliding game. What was it called again, the pancake game?
Soggy pancake.
Soggy game. Pancake, that's right. Okay. So when you were at the summer camp, did you ever get homesick at all?
The first night it was sort of everybody was sort of homesick, because you like just got there, you're on the other side of Washington, so everybody was kind of homesick. But after that, it was pretty fun.
Yeah. How did the counselors deal with that? What your first night you got off the bus, and you know there's going to be a lot of people who've been away. This is the first time they've been away from their parents and stuff. Do you remember if you guys had a campfire, if you had a big sing-along or capture the flag or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. We played Capture the Flag in the dark and in black clothes.
Wow. That was the first night you got there?
Yep.
Yeah. It kind of keeps you active in that. And you're a scout, so you've been pretty used to going on campouts away from your family for a little bit. But did you get homesick at all?
The first night, yes, because, okay. I mean, that was my first going away of the whole summer.
Yeah, that's true. That was before Scout Summer Camp, yep. So, but you had some of your buddies there, and so that was pretty cool.
Yep.
So, let me ask you this about the youth group in general. That includes the Wednesday night meeting, the special weekend events, and the summer camp. What's your most favorite stuff to do during the youth group activities?
I probably just like going, having fun with friends, sharing about what's happened in our week so far since we don't go to the same schools and rarely see each other.
Oh, yeah. So your youth group is not just the same people from the same school, but it draws from a lot of different schools, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So and how many kids, do you remember how many kids you get there in a regular Wednesday night meeting?
A regular Wednesday night meeting is anywhere from 30 to 50 kids.
Okay, wow. So that's pretty good.
Not including adult leaders or high school leaders.
And how do you think the adult leaders are doing? Are they doing a pretty good job? Is Scott Thompson doing a good job?
Yeah, I really think they're doing a good job because they're reaching out to us with problems that we have in our daily lives.
Well, give me an example of one of the problems that you have in your daily life.
Swearing.
Oh, you swear, huh? Okay. So that's one of the things that comes up and discusses. They present a challenge to you to maybe not swear for the next week or so?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's pretty cool. Now, one of the things I have to ask about, you were really active in youth group during the spring and the summer and a little bit into the fall, but the last couple months or so, you haven't been going as much. Why is that?
Well, all my schoolwork has sort of been piling up and it's been taking a lot out of my Wednesday nights, and I also have some other activities on Wednesday that I can't miss.
Such as?
I can't remember.
Well, then they must have been really important, huh? Well, what are some of the things you're doing now besides youth group?
Basketball and homework, but once basketball ends, I'll probably be going back to youth group more.
Okay.
Because that will just take a big chunk out of free time, it bring back a big chunk of time, free time into my life.
So it's just really, you're 11 years old, almost 12 years, sixth grade. Everything's really active, so it's kind of hard getting there Wednesday night to youth group.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, I can understand that. You know, busy kids doing lots of busy stuff. But it's nothing that the youth group's doing, right? It's just the time schedule is just really hectic.
Yeah.
And plus, we also have something new to the household. Do you know what that is?
Oh, yeah, our dog.
Yeah, our dog. What's the dog's name?
Rocky.
Rocky. It's pretty cool having a dog, isn't it?
Yeah.
One of God's creatures, so you get to take care of that. Well, Victor, it has been a pleasure having you on Research on Religion. Do you want to say anything to all the folks out there listening to us? We actually got some people in Fort McMurray, Canada that are listening to us, so you want to say hi to them?
Hello.
All right. Well, Victor, thank you very much for being on Research on Religion.
God bless our troops.
Thank you for listening to Research on Religion. To learn more about today's topic, participate in a discussion about what you've heard, or browse other podcasts, please visit our website at www.researchonreligion.org. And if you like what we're doing, please tell a friend. We'd appreciate the company. See you next week.